It is my distinct privilege, great privilege, to introduce our next speaker. Donna Bevan-Lee is a great friend of Codependence Anonymous. In fact, she's a founding board member of Codependence Anonymous and had great influence on how things were written in the Blue Book. She's a practicing therapist here in Seattle area for almost 40 years, right?
Wow.
And a great involvement in the community. She works with the Seattle Police Department. She's also a consultant to the World Health Organization. And the fact is, I really don't have to say much more about her. Because those of you know her, know that you could say it, and say it, and say it, and never say it now. So let's welcome Donna.
I'm so glad to see everyone here. I'm happy every year because I see more and more people that I know here, people that I have known here. The first time, there were a lot of people I didn't know, and I thought, oh, it would be great if people I knew were here. And so I get really a lot of joy when I see this. So anyway, I would like to thank Elizabeth and Rick for all the work they've done for the CODA. For those of you who haven't been around for 40 years, when I first came here, CODA was kind of up and down, and it would get going in, you know, stops and starts, and it was just, you know, it was hard to find. It was difficult, and Rick and Elizabeth have taken this program and really, you know, given it life, and I am so grateful for that. Thank you. And everybody else, too, but they have really spearheaded this, so thank you so much. So today, I'm going to talk about how to navigate family relationships when you are in codependence recovery. He's already discussed what codependence is. I just want to remind you that a couple of things that I'll just say periodically. A codependence is not you with somebody else. It's like, I am not codependent on anybody else, right? If I have it, it's an illness that I have. It's in my soul. I'm trying to feel better, all right? It does get acted out in relationships, because if you can't stay in your adult reality, you're in your codependence. If the other person can't stay in their adult reality, they're in their codependence. So you might have a couple of teenagers going at it sometimes, a couple of five-year-olds going at it sometimes. If you're lucky, you can get a functional adult in there sometimes. But, you know, that's what it's required. It's required of you and what you're doing, what you're thinking, and what you're feeling. That's when you are in recovery for your codependence. That's when you're not in. Codependence is a disease of adults. Children are not codependent. Children act their age at all times. Always. If they are 15 and smoking pot and giving you a nightmare, they are acting their age. If you are in your functional adult, you are going to be in a better position to act appropriately and deal with this 15-year-old that's acting his age, his or her age. So the problem is that when the 15-year-old is acting their age and the grown-up, the parent, is now acting the same age as the 15-year-old, yeah, you can't do this. Who do you think you are? Year old in a fight, then there's no adult in the room, and you know the child is acting their age. So if the adult acts their age, then it can actually work out. I mean, if you think about this, this is one of the relationship areas I'm going to talk about today. But if you are a functional adult with your children, you are not their best friend. They have friends. If you are a functional adult raising your children, they won't need you as their best friend because they will have self-esteem, a sense of reality. They'll be able to act, at least know what moderation is. Because, you know, children, of course, they don't have moderation. I've never heard anybody just, oh, well, there's a child who's moderate. I've never heard that. there's a child who has boundaries. I've never heard that. Because they're children. But if grown-ups at their age, they can take care of these children while they're trying to grow up. Okay? So I'm going to talk about that. The other thing I'm going to talk about, and that's what this here is to talk about your family of origin when you are in codependence recovery. Because it was caused, if you're in here, I can tell you that you had family of origin trauma. You had childhood trauma. Codependence is caused by childhood trauma. Codependence, if you take all of the symptoms of codependence and how people act them out, you could read all about it in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. We have a whole book, but we identify and diagnose people in those symptoms, which is part of the hopelessness that people get. Like if you have anxiety disorders, and there's a whole part of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that you would relate to, that's all about you. When you take it out of that context and put it into this context of codependence, it's like you're emotionally immature and you live in fear. That gives you a little bit more to work with, wouldn't you say? Than to say, well, I have an anxiety disorder. Well, actually, I am emotionally immature and I live in fear. I can do something about that. I can learn how to manage that. I can learn how to deal with fear. I can find out if that's my fear or someone else's fear. And then I can get in my functional adult. And if I'm my functional adult standing right here today, what do I have to fear? Nothing. And so my anxiety starts to drop, right? That's what this work does. It's so important. Is that when you grow up in a family that's less nurturing, when you experience trauma, you feel fear. Over-the-top fear, probably. And that impacts your emotional development. So when you grow up, your body might be this tall, but your emotional self is this tall, this tall, this tall, this tall. Depends on the time, the situation, and the moment, who you're interacting with. When you're in recovery from codependence, you're able to identify when you are in those different emotional states and grow yourself up. This is a program where people grow up. When I was listening to Rick and Elizabeth this morning, they have really grown up. Having those talking boundaries where they're not like flipping and flopping all over the place or trying to guess what each other's doing or what they really meant and all this, it really works. Growing yourself up. And that means, for most of us, I've just never seen this. This is a fact, okay? When you really get in recovery for your codependence and you grow yourself up, you're going to find that all of your relationships will change. But it's not because they're changing. Believe me, especially when you're going to deal with your family of origin, they're just as sick as they always were. And remember, before you got in recovery for your codependence, you were getting sicker and sicker and sicker all the time, right? Well, so what? You get in recovery for your codependence and their sickness just stays stable? Oh, no. They're getting sicker and sicker and sicker all the time. And so when you interact with family of origin. Don't save the family. You can't do it. There's a movie about it. Stuart saves his family. If you've never seen it, it's like, there he goes. He's going to save his family. And what a nightmare. I mean, it's funny, but it's also pretty right on. Stuart saves his family. Who's that senator from Minnesota who's in it? Al Franken. Oh, yeah, it's so great. You have to see it. So I'm going to give you some do's and don'ts about your family of origin, okay? I like things simple. Boundaries. I'm just going to throw these words in once in a while. Just like give you a subconscious hit, so maybe you'll hear it. So, boundaries. The first thing with family of origin, the first thing to not do, okay, these are the don'ts. Do not share the good news of your codependence recovery and announce that you finally now know what is wrong with the family. And don't announce to your siblings that now you know that everybody was abused and that your family, your parents, were acting like children, or your dad was a sex addict, or your mother was a prescription pill drop addict. Do not announce this good news. It is such a bad idea. You know, when people start laughing, I already know you've done it. I know you did it. Don't do this individually, and don't do this at the Thanksgiving dinner table. People really want to do this. You know, I've got this legacy workshops that some of you have been to, and I always say, throughout the workshop, like boundaries, I always say, do not share this with your family. Because when people are in there doing their family of origin work, it's like so energizing. People's like, oh, I see it. I'll just share it. And then we'll have the happy family. Do I look like an adult when I'm doing that? No, I'm back in my wounded child, or I'm back in my adapted adult child. I'm not going to get that family back, or the idea of the family back. Once I'm a grown-up, my days of being a child are over. I have an adult responsibility to act like an adult. This doesn't mean I'm going to go back there, share the good news. My parents are going to love me. They're going to take good care of me. They're going to teach me about boundaries. They're going to act in moderation. They're going to make me feel special and wonderful and happy that I'm there. That's insanity. My siblings are not going to change either. Just because I'm in recovery. So I've been in recovery going on 37 years. And in 37 years, I'm now married, by the way. Yay. I would never believe that would happen. My spouse is right back there. Wonderful. And she wrote this because I have no handwriting. It's so bad. I'm surprised that the CIA isn't watching out thinking I'm writing in code. It's really bad. So in almost 37 years, I can tell you right now, because I brought her up because she hears me say this periodically after I've talked to my mother on the phone, which is hysterical. Whether I've talked to my brother, whoever it is that I've talked to, I get off the phone and I go, how do they live? And it's not, I try not to be judgmental, but I do have, you know, I am capable of making a judgment about what is good or bad or functional or not. I mean, that part of that's my job as a therapist, but the other part is as an adult human being who's functional, I have to say, oh, that's not a good idea. idea. And so I say, wow, that's not a good idea. Whenever I talk to them, they've gotten sicker. 37 years later, they've gotten sicker. I will tell you, in all seriousness, though, that when I get off the phone, I'm usually not laughing. I'm usually in pain. I have pain about that. I also have, I used to have some fear, but, you know, I don't really have fear about it now because I know that I can't control anything. So, hey, you know, why have fear about that? But it's mostly pain, a little bit of sadness, you know, and I feel kind of lonely because they don't want to stop having a relationship with me. I mean, I can understand that because I've been in recovery for a long time. I have boundaries, and I know what my reality is, and I'm not trying to get their love and attention and all that, so... You know, for them, it's easy to be in a relationship with me. It's like I have realistic expectations when I'm talking to them. Realistic expectations when it comes to family of origin that has been less than nurturing would look like this. Okay? No expectations. None. If there's no expectations, I'm not going to feel... disappointed. And it's, you know, I've heard people say, well, I won't have any expectations, I won't have any disappointment. Well, I've heard my 15-year-old say that. When he says this, it's like, it's a challenge. Well, I just won't. But when I say, it makes, I feel bad and a little pain that, you know, having no expectations. I know that I have those no expectations because there's nothing coming for me. That makes me feel sad sometimes, and it makes me have a little pain sometimes, but I still love them. They belong to me. They are not going anywhere until they die. And so this journey, dealing with your codependence in relationship, primary relationship is one thing. But dealing with it with your family of origin is a whole other animal. Okay? I made this up, and my lovely spouse Deb wrote it up here, so you can read it if you can see it, because it's kind of a small thing. So I just made some stuff up. This doesn't necessarily mean it's my family, but I would just tell you that, you know, I made this little family of origin thing up here so I can show you what it looks like. Why people get insane. Boundary. Okay. So we have the mother. Okay, M is for mother, and we're going to say she's 80. And of course she's codependent. Of course. Because if she wasn't, she wouldn't be up here. She might be a prescription drug addict. She has an eating disorder. And by the way, eating disorders don't go away with age. Okay? She might be a religious addict. And her wounded child, y'all know what I'm talking about that? Okay. But she gets triggered into her pain that she has growing up in her family of origin. It looks like a 4-year-old. Her adapted adult child, her teenager, is 14. So 14-year-old girls... Oh, okay, wait, I gotta find out who my friend is today. Wait, who's that boy? I mean, this is 14, right? Dad, 80. He's a work addict, so he's gone a lot. Sex addict. He's gone a lot working, and he's probably gone a lot doing other things sexually outside of his primary relationship. Of course he's codependent. If he's got addictions, he's codependent. His wounded child is 5. His adapted adult child's 13. Okay? 13-year-old boys. Okay, first of all, they smell bad. Can I just say that? No offense, guys. It's like you've been living with estrogen estrogen, and then boom, testosterone hits. It smells funny for a while. So we have the first child, who's 58, recovering alcoholic in Al-Anon, recovering codependent. Is a wounded child, 3 years old. Adapted adult child, 8. Okay, now for those of you who would wonder, well, how did somebody have an adapted adult child when they're 8? Well, this child is the oldest child, and there's this craziness going on with mom and dad. It didn't just start after the kids were grown. This was going on in some capacity while the children were young. So this child had to, what I call, get their adapted adult child on board at a very early age, because this child became a surrogate parent for these three here. And so these, you've probably seen these little like 7 or 8 year olds, they'll walk around like little grown-ups, and they interact like a little grown-up, and they're taking care of business like a little grown-up. Well, that would be this first child. This second child is 56, has chronic illness, been sick all her life. Mary's addicts, isn't one but Mary. Is a religion addict, shopping and spending addict, is codependent. This one is too, but you'll notice recovering. Okay. Wounded child is 2. Adapted adult child is 16. This guy, 54, recovering alcoholic, work addict, coda. Not in recovery for these two. Has a wounded child, 5 years old, and adapted adult child of 13. This one is 52. Mary's addict, has eating disorder, shopping and spending addiction, is codependent, has a wounded child who's 4, an adapted adult child that's 14. The only one that has any semblance of recovery is this one. So just looking at this, you can see that there are these WCs and AACs here are there more frequently than any functional adult. So if you can imagine in your mind, using your best imagination possible, let's say that a situation has come up where, well, let me throw it out there. Can you think of a situation that might come up that you'd want me to just plug into this?
Thanksgiving.
Good. Okay, it's going to be Thanksgiving pretty soon. All right? So these adults here, I'm using that term loosely, 42, 54, 56, and 58, they all talk sometime before Thanksgiving. And let's say this one here, okay, says, I'd really like to have Thanksgiving at the church this year, because we have such a big family that the church could accommodate us. And if I call them up and tell them that, you know, we're all coming to Thanksgiving, we could try and get that church room. Okay? Well, let's say, you know, so what happens here is that this one is got a wounded child of 2. So this, she's kind of bouncing between her wounded child and her adapted adult child, who's 16, because here's a piece of backdrop. These people don't have Thanksgiving together. They don't even live in the same area. We've got alcoholics, drunks, people who marry alcoholics. Look at their ages. They probably have children of their own. And so this one here, it's like coming from this, oh, please, can we all get together? And so this one here will call everyone up and try and get them on board, right? And because she's been sick all her life, she knows that if she acts sick, that people will accommodate her. like, she's sick. Well, you know, we ought to. So as soon as she shows up with her two-year-old wounded child, the rest of these here go into action. Right? Like, this one here, it's like, we always have it the way you want it. That inside, maybe inside voice, maybe not inside voice. This one says, I don't want to be around this guy. I've never been enough for him. I don't want to be around him. I want to be with my own family. Okay? But we all have to accommodate this because, you know, she's sick. So everyone's like, well, you know, why don't you check it out? Because nobody, there's no boundaries. So, and this one over here immediately starts going, well, I wonder what I can do to make this happen. Okay, if I get that, you know, if I get this person and that person and this person, and then I can, like, plan the whole thing, and then everybody will come, and if they just do it right, then we'll all be happy. Start working it, right? These two up here were never parents. They were operating in either their wounded child or adapted adult child the whole time these were growing up. Because this was the parent, right? So these two are going, well, we don't care. Let us know. They're 80. We don't care. Let us know. Can you see? This one over here, okay, this one over here actually has more responsibility, all right? Because this person here knows they're in recovery, codependent. So this one over here actually could break down this thing into, like, not letting it roll down the hill and pick up a lot of steam by just saying, no. First, self-care, right? Let me know how that works out. I've made plans. Because, you know, if you are the one in recovery, people, you know this is a recipe for a cluster. Are you going to let your wounded child, oh boy, we're finally going to do it, right? No, no. Reality is that this is a nightmare. And, okay, you want to go back to the scene of the crime at Thanksgiving, expect different results. Insanity? Of course it's insanity. Because, you know, when people are not in recovery for their codependence, when they're in their family of origin, they're all going to act just the way they always did. And this one here was, you know, this one here was probably identified as the sick person while they were growing up, the bad one, right? So, you know, so this energy has been going on for 80 years, okay? It's like this energy is going to try and pull this one back into the sick position. They're doing this on purpose. They got sicker for 37 years. They didn't get, oh well. And what if you live and you never get in recovery for your codependence? It will kill you. So, you know, mom, dad up there, well, whatever you want, whatever you kids want. See, they can't, it's like they can't stand their adult at all. So you can see where, so this one here is going to start having her eating disorder probably flare up because it's going to be Thanksgiving anyway. And it's trying to figure out, how can I eat massive quantities of food and then go get rid of it without anybody noticing? And how am I going to manage my children who are all a basket case too? And, oh, by the way, I wonder what everyone's thinking about. And, you know, I've really got to, this is your family. I got to lose some weight before we go. Talk about wounded child. Of course, this one over here, no one's listening to her anyway. She's the fourth one. You're not listening to her. So she's over there. twiddling her thumbs, having anxiety attacks over this thing that she thinks is going to happen. So this one here, actually has a bigger impact, because this one here, if this person is acting as a functional adult in their codependence recovery, alcoholism recovery, Al-Anon program, will say this to themselves: "Oh, this my reality based on 58 years of living in this family tells me that this is an extraordinarily bad idea." And even if I don't think it's a bad idea, and I want to jump into the fray and trying to create this, right, to make this happen, it will be really painful. So this one, if they're in their recovery, says, "Okay, self-care is job one. I'm not responsible for changing them." Okay, I've heard this before. "Well, I think I can make this happen. I'll just tell them all what they can and cannot do while I'm there." It's like, okay, as long as you don't yell at me, and you don't call me names, and you don't walk out the door, and, it's like, so you give these people who have been getting sicker and sicker and sicker a whole list of things that will help you feel better about doing it because you're doing self-care. My self-care is telling everybody how to act around me so that I feel okay. That's me being self-care. No, that is not self-care. Self-care is that I know the reality of the situation. And the only thing I have to do is say, "I have another plan." That's all. Because you know what? They might do it. And I'm telling you, I just gave you a preview. If this comes off, I've just given you a preview of how horrible of a situation this will be. Okay? This and here will probably end up drinking. Okay? I mean, because all of these addictions, all of them, are fueled by the family's abuse, abandonment, and neglect of these four children when they were young. And that is the driving force for every addiction. The trauma, abandonment, abuse, and neglect when you were a child fueled your addiction. Now, I will say this, and I'm not going to get in the whole thing about this, but remember what you've probably heard, at least, or read, that addictions, people who have addictions, when they were growing up in a family that was less than nurturing, they were distracting the addicts. The up-and-coming addicts in that family found ways to distract themselves from the intolerable reality of growing up in a family that was less than nurturing. They're all of the addicts except the love addict. The love addict, for all you love addicts, yes, you're special. I know you do. You're special, because love addiction is actually the natural consequence of growing up in a family that is less than nurturing. And the ones who have that love addiction as their primary addiction that they come into therapy with or treatment with, it's like they're the little eyes that have been looking at those parents trying to figure out. They don't take their eyes off those parents. The other addicts, they're distracting themselves. "Oh, look at, there's a chicken. Oh, look at, there's an alcohol. Oh, look, there's a whatever." But the love addict, man, they have their eyes on those parents the whole time, trying to figure out how I can get those people to love me, what I need to do to get their attention. I know they love me. I've heard I've heard people say this to me all my life when I say, well, I heard talk about your family of origin. Well, I know they love me. That's not necessarily true. I hate to be the one to break the bad news, but sometimes parents know exactly what they're doing, and they're not being kind to their children. And they don't love those children. So, you know, that's not a given. But when you're a love addict, you're saying to yourself, I know that person loves me. I know they do. I mean, we're meant to be. We're soulmates. Y'all know how I hate boundaries. Okay. So we're meant to be. And I just need to figure out what I need to do to get them to notice what they need to do. To get them to notice how they're supposed to love me. They forgot I'm over here. Well, I'll just let them know I'm still here. Stalk, stalk, stalk. Okay? So we have this situation. And like I said, if you are the one who's in recovery, do not go to that position. We love each other. And we just get together and, you know, we'll just make sure that everybody is blah, blah, blah. And I'm telling everybody what they should do. This is going to be a nightmare. Anyone see the movie Ice Storm? That's another good movie. I don't watch it alone. It's a little dark. But it is about Thanksgiving. A dark Thanksgiving. But then we know what that's like up here, right? It's always dark at Thanksgiving. But this is a movie that was back in the 70s. A lot of graduate school in psychology and social work have their people watch it, have students watch it, because it is so, it's pretty right on about how the dysfunction manifests itself, especially during holidays. Okay. So, let me go back here and tell you that another thing. Do not do this with family of origin. Do not use talking boundaries with family of origin. My God. Or you can just walk in and say, here, I'll give you a gun, shoot me. It's like, you've got a bunch of people who are not in recovery who've been getting sicker and sicker and sicker. They are wounded, wounded, wounded. If you walk in and say, well, when I drove up, I saw you peek out the window at me, and my reality about that was, or what I made up about that was, is that you were trying to see, everybody's laughing. Can you imagine this? That your family of origin? I mean, you know what they all do? And I don't need, you know, so I don't really care what they do. But it's like, they would all sit around after you left and say, oh, that therapy I'm really working for. There's another good reason not to go to a 12-step program. Those people are crazy. They can't even carry out a conversation. All of their wounded children, and mostly adapted adult children, would show up. And all of their adaptive adult children, the 16, the 13, the 14, the 13, and the 14, would all sit around and gossip about you. Just like they would in a playground. So, no talking boundaries with family of origin. It works great when you have people that are like, say you're even married to somebody, that you're in recovery or they're not. You know, even then, if you're going to use a talking boundary, tell them, you know, I have this way of communicating that I'd like to try out before I do it. Because, you know, it might help us. And then you say, would you be willing to do that? If they say yes, okay, you get the green light. Now use a talking boundary. But if they say, no way, I know how to talk. I don't need you're a therapist to tell me how to talk or whatever else. Like, you need to take note of that. Oh, I see. This isn't working out so well, so I won't do it. That's what a functional adult does. If it's not working out, I'm stopping that now. Okay, so that's another do not do. Another thing I want to say is that when you're dealing with your family of origin, pay attention. Pay attention. Because when you're not paying attention, what happens? Right! Your boundaries are gone. And if you're not thinking about your boundaries, you don't have them. As I know when I go to my family of origin, you know, if I stay with my mother, is that I have to think about my boundaries from the second I walk in her house until I go to bed at night, until I close the bedroom door. As soon as I open up my bedroom door and go into wherever she is, my boundaries have to be on board. And why is that? Because I still do have that little wounded Donna in there. She's better and better all the time. And she'll stay better and better all the time as long as I don't forget her. Okay? As long as I don't hurt her or put her in harm's way. Which, by the way, if I'm walking into my family of origin without my boundaries, I'm just walking in with her up here. You go. You go deal with her. You were so good at it before. So I've got to be thinking about these little kids. I got to be thinking, oh yes, I do have a wounded child. And she trusts me and is relying on me to keep her safe when we go back to the scene of the crime. And my adapted adult child, oh, she could come up that fast. If she's a smart little puppy, and she knows how to bring it on with the family. Okay? So, you know, I could let my adapted adult child out there, and I could just take names right now. Because I'm not physically big enough to hurt anybody most of the time. But, you know, if I am not having my boundaries, and my adapted adult child gets triggered, who's probably at, you know, sometimes she's 12, sometimes she's 8, sometimes she's 15, she's going to come out and nail you right between the eyes. And you're going to be going like that. So rather than perpetuate the dysfunction, I have the boundaries. So at the end of the day, when I'm visiting my mother, I'm freaking exhausted. I really do have to go to bed early. And I have to get away sometimes. So, gee, you know, I walk every day. You know, sometimes my mother will say, well, I'd like to work with you, but I just don't think I can today. I'm just not feeling well. I say, okay, fine. You sit here and rest. Because that's what she does. It's like, here's what my adapted adult child would say. Well, you really need to get up and start moving your body. Because it is your primary source of transportation. And if you're not taking care of that primary source of transportation, it will fail on you. And when you have a heart attack and die, don't blame me. Her reality is that she sits and complains and worries that she's going to have a heart attack. I notice this. I only make it enough of my reality so I know what the heck's going on. But I do not fix it. Now, people, leave legacy. I could go fix my family. They don't want to be fixed. And they really don't want to be fixed by you. I was like, sometimes when I'm in my, I guess I'm just having a moment. When I come back from visiting my family, and I say, you know, even saying this out loud is embarrassing, but I'll say it anyway. So I say to Deb, I say, you know, I go up to my office tomorrow. There are people who want to come in and see me. They freaking pay me money to help them learn how to feel better, how to make their families work better, how to, you know, feel better and get their life on board. They will get They'll go on a waiting list. They'll trust me to take them through the legacy program. And my family doesn't have the time of day. And I go, how insane is that? So my point is that I could really go in there and fix this family. Not. Neurosurgeons don't do their own brain surgery. Okay, here's some things you can do with your family of origin. Have strong boundaries when returning to the scene of the crime. These were painful relationships. Now they're complicated. They were complicated before you get a recovery. But once you get a recovery and start doing all those dealing with those five core symptoms, now they're complicated because you know more. You are aware now when you see it happening. Before you just like be in it, doing what it is you did, right? But now you know. And now you have boundaries. And now you recognize where the potholes are. So you're like avoiding them and saying, gee, I have something else I have to do. I have somewhere else I have to be. All right? They're complicated. These people aren't trying to bring you back to the level that you were when you dragged yourself into your first CODA meeting or your first session in therapy. They're fluid relationships. And they will unwittingly, and I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, try to pull you back into the position you were in. Now, I would venture a guess and say that the people in this room had the most pain. Pain is what gets you into recovery. So until they're in enough pain, they're not going to get in recovery. And you don't want to be the world's biggest enabler, which is, here, let me fix you for a minute. Let me tell you how it is for a minute. Let me do this, let me do that for you. For a minute. And it will soften that downward spiral so that you can go on and be sicker for longer. You do realize, as you recover, that, like I said, you will get more clarity in those relationships and your position in those relationships. And whatever you do, as you get clarity, remember this. They are not getting clarity through osmosis with you. They are not osmosing clarity through your clarity. So so you cannot expect that just because you've got clarity that they're going to have it. I mean, I'll tell you, once you get clarity, well, this is so obvious to you, not to them. This is another thing. This will help you in your life every day, but particularly with your family and origin. These are the hardest relationships. Know what your intentions are. That means that you've got your boundaries on board and you're thinking reality, what you're thinking, you are aware of this. So if I have intentions, you know, and I hear people say, well, that my intention was not to go in and stir that pot. My intention was this. My mother is failing and my intention was to go in and try and get my siblings to see how she's failing and that she needs to go into assisted care. Okay, I've been a therapist for about 40 years. I've never, ever gotten someone to understand anything. And they, you know, until they want to. And people are there because they want to be. So they'll understand faster than this car accident that you're going to be dealing with if this is happening in your family of origin. I'm telling you, it is hard, hard, hard to have boundaries and not get tied up in what you want the outcome to be. I mean, you think about this. So you have, let's say you have an elderly parent who you can clearly see in your own, with your own eyes, needs assisted care. All right? And you have siblings that are all codependent in their addictions, whatever, right? And you're going to go in there and try and make something happen? It won't. And not only that, but you'll be identified yet again as the problem. Well, you know, when you come around here and do that, mom or dad gets to that. See how upset they get? And then they don't remember anything and blah, 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 blah. So letting go, this is hard work. Letting go of the things that you cannot change. So, but you're clear. You know what's going on. And what you do is you do things like, okay, well, I'm gonna find out what it takes to get, like, guardianship, what it takes to get this, what it takes to get that, what the mental health laws are, whatever it is. And then you wait until there's an opportunity. They come. I mean, sometimes the doctor on the 28th emergency room call that week, right, with the same person, might say, is there anyone else I can talk to in this family? And they might call you. And suddenly it's like they get someone who's clear, who's not all wrapped up, who's around the axle, who's, like, present and has boundaries. And they can say, here's what I noticed. This is what I know to be true. This is what I would like to have happen. You know, there will be people out there who could even be helpful. But you can't do it. It doesn't work. I'd say go ahead and do it if it worked. I've never heard of it working. So, be aware of yourself so you protect yourself. Know what you're doing when you're dealing with your family of origin. Keep your expectations down there. They can't do any more than they ever did. If they are not in some kind of recovery, if they haven't dealt with their issues, they're getting sicker. And you can still, I mean, you can still have conversations. You can still have interactions. But when you're having those interactions, boundaries, you're not sharing about yourself. It isn't safe. This is where sickness started. So it's not safe. So when you're talking to them, many of you have heard me say this, it's called news, weather, and sports. News, weather, and sports. I'm talking to these people, I'm talking about news, weather, and sports. They say, how are you doing? I might be sitting there, you know, with my leg off. I'm fine. I'm good. I have good people here. Deb, she's right here. Like, well, I'm going to say, oh, my leg just fell off. And they'll say, well, you know what happened to me the other day? You've all had this experience, right? So don't do it. It just makes you feel bad. Now I want to say a few words about with young children. I know somebody else is going to talk about parenting, okay? But I just want to talk about this in terms of navigating your family, your relationship. If you are lucky enough to be in this room and have young children at home, you will be happy. You will have joy in your life. And the reason is because you know how to be a functional adult, reality, and your children can be their age. Now, when children have adults, parents, who are functional adults, they get infected with recovery. You know? It's like if you're in recovery, your kids are going to get infected with it. And it's a sad situation, I know. Probably have to find some kind of vaccine for that, but they will get infected with it. You show up as a functional adult in their lives. They're still on their own path. They will still have to go down and do their own life. They're going to have to run into their own problems, their own walls, They might even develop addiction. We know there's a genetic component to addiction. But if you have young children at home, they're infected with recovery, and they know back in their mind, my mom and dad went to those meetings. My mom and dad talked about boundaries. My mom and dad were, you know, not my best friends. So if they're not my best friend, then when it really hits, you know, when it really hits, like, I know that I could go to them because I don't have to worry about whether or not they'll like me. Now, you worry about that with your best friend. Because, oh, God, what if they don't like me after I tell them this horrible, horrible fact? But you, if you were lucky enough to grow up in a family, or your children are lucky enough to grow up with you in recovery, it's like they're starting to get it that these people love me no matter what. No matter what, no matter what, no matter what. They also give me guidance and direction. They also know how to say no to me. They know how to hold the line with me. I'll tell you, if I'm crashing and burning somewhere, that's who I want to go to. So, if you have young children, stay in recovery and don't make it complicated. It's like, just remember this. This is like the most important thing to remember if you have young children, even if you have older children. They will always act their age no matter what. They are not trying to manipulate you. You are older than them. And so if you're feeling manipulated, it's because you are not in your functional adult. You are in your adopted adult child or you're in your wounded child trying to deal with your child. Manipulation is a complicated process. Children don't have that kind of emotional, psychological, or intellectual ability. I've watched my own child try to manipulate me once or twice. It's the funniest thing I ever saw. The hardest thing I had to do was not laugh. Like, wow, that must be hard for him. You know, because my inside voice was saying that. Okay? My inside voice said laugh when my son was young. I was like, oh, isn't that manipulation so cute? And they think they got me wrapped around. Blah, 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 blah. And then just doing what was the most appropriate thing to do. That's what functional adults do. Like if a three-year-old or somebody laying on the ground throwing a fit, or are you going to pick the child up, take them out? Are you going to try and talk to them? I worked in an emergency room. We had mentally ill people have a crisis and they'd come in and throw themselves on the floor and have a fit. They didn't say, oh, Donna, would you please go, you know, deal with this person and diagnose them and, you know, decide whether or not to admit them. Then, no. It's like, well, have to let that calm down for a few minutes. So I still have some dishes to do because I know I'm not going to get in there and make any sense. Okay? So you act like an adult, your children will act their age. With adult children, remember they have their own path. They will have their own challenges. And you know, the hardest thing when you're in recovery yourself, and especially if you have adult children, but you just really want to tell them, I can just do this, it'll be so much better. But you can't, any more than you could tell this one, or this one, or this one, or any of these. But these, you know you can't do that with each other. I mean, you know you can make suggestions, and it'll be much more easily received than if you tell these people. But you still can't make other people do it. These people, they are, in their mind, you're still sick. Boy, you have to go to those meetings all the time, and you're so sick you have to go to therapy, and you're so sick you had to go to a special workshop. They think you're sicker than 10 dogs. So you're going to come and tell them how a really good way to do this? You don't have credibility. I have a little credibility 37 years later, a little bit. But I mean, you know, you don't have credibility with them. You're just one of them. I had an experience, because this goes on. You know, while these people are alive, they're going to be in your life. And so I've tried to keep boundaries. A couple of times I've stepped into that pig pen and, you know, got myself really messy and get the whole thing messy. I had to learn. You know, we all learn. But recently, through a series of events that were going on, my family board and my siblings, I am the oldest, and my siblings said to me, they were all talking about a situation that was occurring in the family, and they were trying to figure out who to talk to, who to go to. And they decided they needed to go to me. And I said, we talked. We had big conversations about the situation. And then I thought it was because I'm such a wise woman, because I'm so good at what I do. They said, you know, we realize that you're our mother. We're bonded to you. Not our mother. She's crazy. Crazy than she'd have rat. How can we bond to that? We bond to you. Like, oh, you mean all that education, all those years of work didn't. Okay, fine. But really, I mean, it is still the family of origin. I did take care of them when they were young. That was just fact. But you never know. It's like, what does that mean? That was pretty amazing that they realized that. We're bonded to you. On Mother's Day, I got the text from them, Happy Mother's Day. It's like, that was just kind of interesting. I'm not their mother. I'm barely older than they are. But you see, 37 years later, they are talking about what to do about these situations. And not because of my professional experience. It's because of my recovery in the family. I stay out of their business. Not all the time. Sometimes it's like they show up in the pig pen. It's like, oh, that's hard. But if you keep, you know, boundaries, even if they're, you know, even if it's Christmas, or even if they're talking to you about their latest whatever, and you're having boundaries, and you know that you're not offering suggestions. You know, the only suggestion I've ever made was, treatment might be an option. Here's some options. Here's treatment facilities. That's it. Or, I know some therapists there. Here's some names. Not until they ask. It is a program of attraction. And that means for your family of origin as well. It means for your adult children as well. Now, if you have adult children who are going through a hard time, the best thing I can do is tell you CODA and Al-Anon. There are special Al-Anon programs for parents who have adult children that are kind of spiraling out, and you want to fix them and blah, 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 and drive you crazy. And you don't want to enable them. Those are good programs for you. It's so great, you know, when you're in a 12-step program, there's a program for everything. But, you know, and I will say this, is that, you know, this is a main one. Because this is where you learn how to grow up. You absolutely learn how to grow up. Growing up emotionally, as well as physically, intellectually, it's that emotional immaturity that gets us into these situations that brings us here. Because everybody wants to be in relationships. And, you know, listen to this carefully. I'm telling you, listening. I'm talking, you should be taking notes, kind of thing. If you understand that all relationships require you to be in recovery for your codependency, all relationships require you to be in your functional adult. I know as a therapist that my relationship with the person sitting across from me is the most important aspect of that therapeutic process. Okay, thank you. The relationship. So the relationships you have with each other, the relationships that you have with your children, whether they're young or whether they're adults, the relationships that you have with your coworkers. This is all relationship. We are human beings. We are hardwired to be in relationship. And it keeps us going back over and over and over again. How many times have you said, I'm never talking to that boss again? Does it work? No. No, that's your adapted adult child. As soon as the hands go on the hips, adapted adult child. As soon as you're over there going, oh, you're in your wounded child. So, okay. So you say, I know that I'm going to talk to my boss again. If you're married and you want to, and you need to get a divorce and you have children, you will interact with that person again. And there are some times you might want to get in there and really wrap them over the head to let them know the way that they should be in order so that you can have this ongoing relationship about your children. Has that ever worked? Anybody? No. So you have the responsibility. That's the good news. You have the responsibility about how your relationships are going to go. By practicing those five core symptoms. And if all else fails, boundaries, self-containment. If I don't know what to say, I'm saying nothing. Not making crap up so that I can, like, what? I don't know what. Fill up empty space? Because if I don't know what to say, that's what I'm going to do. Or maybe I'll try and control you. That works too. Like I said, if these things work, I'd say go ahead and do it. Now, there are a couple of things that I just want to say. These are like, I thought I would end and then give you some time to have questions and answers if you like. And then if you don't like, I'll just go on. There are a couple of things that I found out about being in recovery. And the first one is that you can only abandon yourself. Nobody else can abandon you if you are an adult. If you're a child, absolutely you can be abandoned. But if you are an adult and you're feeling abandoned, it's time to go to a meeting. It's time to look inside. It's time to do self-care. People can leave, and we all are adults in here. We all know that adult life is full of people leaving and coming into our life, coming and going. So they're not abandoning. And if you have a boundary, you know that if that person's leaving, it's about them. It's not about me. Unless I've been abusive to them in some way. Boundaries are self-containment. Self-containment. Not you do this and you do that, and if you will do that, then we'll be able to have a relationship. No. Self-containment. What am I doing? What am I saying? What am I thinking? What am I putting out? That's the boundary. What am I deciding? If I have a boundary, I'm thinking about it, and if I'm not thinking about it, it is not there. Dangerous place. This is a journey, not a destination. So if any of you think that someday you'll finally get there, I'm sorry. Self-care is job one. That means feed yourself good food, nutritional food. Get sleep. You ever tried to have boundaries when you're hungry and tired? No, it's impossible. Well, hard. So you get appropriate amount of sleep. You give yourself good nutrition. You have people in your life that care about you. Not, you don't have people in your life that just suck the energy out of you. I know that it's true that in recovery, sometimes you have to do some emotional house cleaning. That means that the people that you used to do X, Y, or Z with, that might not work anymore. Okay? Love addiction is a natural consequence of untreated codependence. If you have codependence, you must treat it before you even think about getting into a relationship, a primary relationship. If you are in one already, then you need to keep working on your codependence and your love addiction. And you know, love addicts are also avoidant. They can turn into avoidant that fast. And then they can turn back into a love addict that fast. And avoidants are love addicts. And they can turn into a love addict that fast and back. So the only way that you can deal with your love addiction and love avoidance is by being in recovery for your codependence. And then, again, I know you've heard this 9,000 times, and I heard that some of you are really getting this. If you're not thinking about your boundaries, they're not there. Okay, any questions? Yes. And microphone.
To take my 4 and 6-year-old on a trip to visit my family of origin. And I often notice when we're together, they seem confused.
Who's?
My children.
Oh, okay.
And I never know afterwards, like, how much should I help them process? Should I bring it up? Should I wait till I ask? Like, I don't know quite how to help them process what they experience.
That's a really good point. When you have young children and you're taking them into your scene of crime, okay, it's a good idea, I think, to tell them some basics based on their age, appropriateness, because otherwise they will be confused. They get gaslighted, okay? It's like they might walk in and say, I don't think Grandpa likes me. Oh, yes, he does. Okay, gaslight. Your reality isn't what isn't real, okay? So you might want to say, let's just say this. I'm going to give you an example. Even with a 4 and a 6-year-old, you might say, you know, Grandma and Grandpa, they don't quite know how to be around kids very well. And so I want you to know that you don't have to do anything to make them feel good. So if they want to hug you and you don't feel like it, you just don't do it and you come and talk to me. If you have any questions, you come and talk to me. And then, you know, they don't ask complicated questions. Sometimes it might seem complicated because it can trigger your child in that fast. But they might say, oh, how come Grandma and Grandpa drinks too much? You say, yeah, they have a disease. You know, they can't help it. So when they're drinking too much, I want you to be sure you're with me. And then you always, when you're taking young children back to your scene of the crime, you always try to keep them supervised by you. Don't leave them there. Remember those people got sicker? And it won't help your children. Now, you know, each situation is different, but I would strongly suggest that you talk to them and let them know that they could come to you all through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
When do you stop trying with your family of origin? When's the time to just say enough's enough and cut it off?
Today. I'm not being facetious. Well, I'm really not being facetious.
My question is related. In my family of origin, when I was 7 years old, my dad decided I was going to be the family scapegoat, so he didn't drink it with me. And then he started on with this emotional abuse thing that just was constant. So my siblings jumped in on that, and so I ended up being the scapegoat. So the problem is, my parents are now deceased, and my sister and her children have kind of picked up where Grandpa left off, and and when you mentioned gaslighting, my brother and my sister and her kids all engage in this gaslighting. Oh no, you didn't have that happen. Oh, that's not the way it was. Or your perception is wrong. You know, you just don't know what you're talking about. I was just wondering, do I just say, okay, enough. I'm done.
What I would say is the same thing I just said to that woman in the green shirt today. It's like when you are still so early in your recovery, and I can tell you are, okay, is that when you're still so early in your recovery, sometimes you just got to take a break from your family organ. Because, you know, it's like you are wounded. And it's like spending time around them, literally. It's like, okay, so let's just say, for instance, I'm going to use this as an example. Say I've been raped, all right? And now my therapist or somebody says, and I'm not saying this has happened, okay? I'm just giving an example. So let's say six months down the road, my therapist says, you know, I think it would be really good for you to, like, go out to Purdy and go to the women's AA meetings out there. Okay, I would go into a situation with offenders. They might not be the same offenders, but they're offenders with all their stuff that they have going on. And I'm going to go there and feel like I've got anything to offer? No. It's like, we're literally, when I say it's going back to the scene of crime, I mean it. I said, most of you who grew up in families that were less than nurturing that brought you to here, if that thing was happening today and somebody knew about it, your parents would be in prison. It's a crime to hurt children.
Yes.
Can I say that smart?
Yeah. Right. As a child, don't go back there. At least not until you've got a lot of recovery on board. And then let them try and find a new scapegoat. If you're not there, it's not happening to you.
Right.